Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hello, everybody. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio. It's a pleasure to be with you. You know, we talk to a lot of fascinating people on these shows, and we are really happy to welcome back Dr. Melissa Corley Carter today. She was a guest here on Close Up Talk Radio last week. Had a fascinating discussion with Jim Masters, and now it's my chance to have a chance to talk to her. She's amazing. She is known as the Barefoot Dancing Rocket Scientist. What a title. She's a coach, and she helps people. She helps people who are high achievers who've kind of lost their spark and feel like they were meant for more, but they really aren't sure what, and they want to make a difference in the world, but they aren't sure how. Well, Melissa helps them discover a renewed sense of purpose, joy, and zest for life so they can create the life that they really want, and from there go on to make the difference in the world that they are here to make. It's an amazing thing she does, and through her exceptionally unique coaching, she helps clients discover within themselves the tools, the mindsets, and the practices to handle life's challenges while awakening and expanding into their soul's purpose. I mean, she brings people to life. She's not a coach who helps you with your family, you know, differences, or, you know, you're a vice president and you've gotten an elevation at the job and you aren't ready for that. There's a coach that can help you in every aspect of your life out there. She's a really, really unique coach, and it was great to have her here. But there's something else very interesting about her. She is an actual rocket scientist. She is a certified professional coach who we talked about, who focuses on resilience, leadership, and success. But she is also the author and the photographer of a recently released book called Running the World, Marathon Memoirs from the Seven Continents. The book, by the way, is all about her journey of running marathons on all seven continents on Earth, as well as the journey toward living a more authentic life. The book is available through Amazon, obviously, and other booksellers, and also at Melissa's website. She says, I should point out a little bit, her desire from an early age was to become an astronaut. She didn't quite become an astronaut, but she has done a lot of other things. I could give you more of her background, but I'm going to bring her on. And as she puts it, she's dancing the universe every day and experiencing the cosmic connection that she really wanted to when she set her sights on the stars. She says she's living her dream, and that's what she wants her clients to do. So that's a little bit of her story as a coach, but I want to talk to her today about the book she wrote. And I think it's kind of fascinating. So let's bring Melissa on again. Melissa is with us from her base in Dumfries, Virginia. It's near Quantico, by the way. Dr. Melissa Corley Carter. Dr. Carter. Melissa, welcome. How are you this morning? Nice to have you here. How's it going?
Thank you. It's going well. Thank you so much for that introduction, Doug. I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here with you.
Well, we're going to eliminate coaching right now. We're going to talk about this book, and we're going to talk about you running a marathon on seven continents. Number one, I've never run a marathon. I've never had the desire to. And I'm amazed and envious of people who can do it. But let's get into this. Your background is so unique, and you've done so many things. Where did your desire to run a marathon actually begin? How did that come about?
It's funny. I never really considered myself very athletic, never really thought of myself as a runner. But once I joined Air Force ROTC in college, I obviously had to start running. You know, you have to run for military. You know, we have a fitness test every year, and, you know, you just got to be in shape. So I did start running. And then in actually my first Air Force assignment after college, I had a friend who was a really good runner, and she started taking me on longer and longer runs. So I started to get some distance under my belt. And, you know, just started to do, you know, kind of in the 8 mile range. And my mom actually told me that there was a marathon in Big Sur in California on the coast, the Pacific coast there. And that's an area of the country that I've always loved. And I thought, wow, the chance to run on the Pacific Coast Highway, how cool is that? So that was September, and the race was in April, and I thought surely I could train for a marathon, you know, by April. So I did, and so you know, run a marathon had never been a goal of mine. It wasn't on my bucket list, but it was really that chance to run in Big Sur that inspired me. And then I was actually at the Marathon Expo for that, and there was a booth for the Seven Continents Club, which was all about, you know, running marathons on all seven continents. So I was pretty immediately inspired with that idea. So really, before I'd even started that first marathon, I was ready to run on all seven continents.
You know, that must have been really, really cool to run a marathon in Big Sur. You were running right along. Were you on the Pacific Coast Highway, part of it, overlooking the Pacific?
We were, yes, the whole way, yes. Mm-hmm.
Ah, yeah, that's a spectacular sight up there, no question. Of all the marathons, you've done seven of them. We'll get to it, but which one, which place that you ran a marathon comes back to hit you as the most stunning that you were in, where you ran a marathon?
So that's a really difficult question, I'll say. So when I think about the marathons, I think of each one of them was my favorite for something different. But I would say, as far as stunning goes, I'm going to go with Antarctica. Because Antarctica was just stunning in every possible way, just huge icebergs, just the sound of the ice cracking was just something that I had, it sounded like thunder. It was something that I had never experienced. It was such pristine beauty. You know, obviously not a lot of people go to Antarctica, so it's, you know, ice shelves and snow and penguins, of course, and just incredible. It was unlike anything I have ever seen. So that was pretty amazing to be immersed in that.
I can believe that. I would imagine, though, to run in Antarctica a marathon, you would have to be fairly well clothed, right? I mean, the temperature was obviously pretty damn cold. Is it hard to run a marathon 26 miles when you're heavily clothed?
It is, but I was used to, you know, I had trained in a lot of layers. I was used to, you know, I would rather be too hot than too cold during a marathon. So I would totally layer up at the beginning and usually kept most of my stuff on. There were people who got warm enough that they kind of stripped down to tank tops while they were running. I mean, I thought they were crazy, but some people do that, I guess. So, it was actually about 40 degrees. It was at the end of February, which is the end of the Antarctic summer. So about as warm as it's going to get, but it was also 40 mile an hour wind, and it was raining, and it was muddy, and it was rocky, and it was just everything about it. And by the end, it's like, you definitely felt like you had run a marathon in Antarctica. So yeah, I had the face mask, you know, before masks were cool, and you know, all the layers, and it was, you know, but I had trained like that, so it felt, you know, normal, I guess, except for the weather conditions, which I had not experienced.
Wow, that just sounds amazing. Absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. It's funny, my daughter got an email the other day about running a marathon on the Serengeti in Africa, and she would love to go do it, but I don't think it's going to happen because it's next, you know, two weeks from now. That would be a great place to run a marathon. Let's go through. All right, let's talk about the book a little bit. What's the overarching theme of the book? Why is it beneficial for somebody to read the story? What do they get from it?
Well, you know, first of all, just the inspiration of it is a trip around the world in photographs. So there, you know, I also love to take pictures. So I did document my travels. So it's a visual tour, but really more than that, it's really about resilience. So it's, you know, you don't have to run a marathon on all seven continents to have an epic life, you know, but it's about the resilience to train for a marathon, but also the resilience to recover from shattered dreams. So, you know, you referenced the astronaut dream in the opening, and that my, you know, astronaut dream got shattered during the process of running these marathons. So not only was I sort of running around the world, I was on an internal journey towards really discovering more about myself. So when I actually got the idea to do this book and thought about how the marathons paralleled the course of my life, I realized that they did parallel the course of my life. I learned a lot about my life from taking the context of each marathon and in the you know the daily life that I was living at the time of that particular marathon and seeing the evolution. So it's really also about the resilience to have that ultimate leap of faith that your true dream is really being fulfilled just in every moment that you show up as you. And it's not about what you do, it's really just about being you.
You know, I probably ought to point out that your background includes as being a certified professional coach who has two engineering degrees from Stanford University. You have an MBA degree from the University of New Mexico and a PhD in astronautical engineering from the Naval Postgraduate School. You did really want to be a rocket scientist, and you are.
Yes.
But you wanted to be an astronaut, and for a real quirky reason, they wouldn't let you do that. What was that?
Mm-hmm. So that was actually pre-LASIK eyesight, I'll say. So I've had 20/20 vision since I got LASIK. Actually, I waited to get eye surgery until NASA started allowing eye surgery for applicants. But as it turned out, they had some minimum standards that were basically like, if it was worse than this before you got surgery, you know, you're still disqualified. So that was it. Even though I passed my vision test, my eyesight before LASIK was so bad that I was disqualified anyway.
Well, what a shame. You would have been a magnificent astronaut, I am sure. It's a doggone shame.
Go
ahead.
I was just going to say about that actually one of the things that I've learned over the years, and I actually do talk about this in the book as well, is that, in fact, that was such a great gift. You know, obviously I was devastated at the time, and it took me years to kind of recover. I didn't look like it necessarily to the outside world, but the recovery and realignment process for me has really brought me to the deep understanding that you know, the rejection from the astronaut program was exactly what I needed to bring me to this path right now. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now had things gone differently. So I'm actually super grateful for it and see the beautiful gift in it.
You know, I can't help but ask you, with the background that you have, you're so highly educated, what got you to end up being a coach like you are now? Where did that come into play?
You know, I think that really came in with what I noticed in myself over the years was that it really wasn't the technical aspects of anything that I was doing that really excited me. It was getting to know people and what motivated them and what inspired them. And so I was always, you know, better or more natural at interpersonal relationships than the tech side. I had to work a lot harder for the tech technical aspects. And so I think it was really understanding that my power was really in helping other people reclaim their own power and really bring out their humanity and help them live their dreams and live their most aligned lives. That was what really inspired me and got me up in the morning. And so when I came to a choice point in my Air Force career, I decided to actually transition from active duty in the engineering side that I was in to actually switch to the reserve, where I had an opportunity to teach leadership and professional development classes. Leadership, in addition to the just human inspiration in general, had always been really interesting and a huge passion of mine. So becoming a coach was sort of the natural follow-on to how can I help people live better lives and happier lives and more fulfilling lives. And that was really what inspired me.
Well, that's great. I mean, good for you. To get back to the stories that you cover in the book, what all do you talk about in the book? I mean, number one, what's your favorite thing about running marathons? How would you answer that? You may have already done that, but go ahead.
No. Actually, you know, what's a lot of fun about marathons is the random people that you end up running next to or with. You know, I think you don't necessarily know the people you're running with when you start out. Everyone's sort of shoved into the starting corral together, but you all have a common goal. You know, everyone's working for the finish line. And you know, I think just sort of bantering and joking with people you pass, that was always fun for me, just saying good job to somebody who passed me or good job to somebody that I passed and cheering people on. I think everyone everybody is united by common purpose when you're running a marathon. And I mean, I'm not fast, so I mean, I'll cross the finish line, but I'm not, you know, an elite athlete or anything like that. So it was really just for the experience. So so it was fun to just sort of joke around, and you may never learn someone's name that you were running next to, but you you know, experience this challenge together. I think that's really cool. And I also think that really people run marathons or take on any big challenge to really connect with the part of themselves that, you know, hopes and believes that they're stronger and greater than they think they are. I think taking on a marathon is really a tribute to that inspirational being a human piece. And so I find that just really, really awesome to experience and myself and see others experiencing for themselves.
You know, I want to point out something. You have a fabulous website, by the way. The website is resilienceactually.com, resilienceactually.com. Anybody who is listening to this broadcast should really check out. You got to check out that website. You'll learn all about her coaching and everything, and you'll learn about a book. And it's a website she did herself. So she needs really to be congratulated. It's a wonderful, wonderful website. Take us
Thank
through,
you.
Since we're talking about running on seven continents, where did you run? Take us through the list of where you ran on the seven different continents, okay?
In North America, I did run Big Sur. I ran Big Sur twice, actually. And the second year, I actually was able to cut an hour off my time because I trained
wow.
even more and actually was living in Monterey at the Naval Postgraduate School, so I actually got to train on the course, so that was really cool. In Europe, I ran the Athens Classic Marathon, which literally starts in the town of Marathon, which, you know, for the original marathon story was a Greek runner ran from the Battle of Marathon to Athens to deliver the report of victory. And that's actually where we get the word Nike from. Nike means victory. And so we got to run basically in the footsteps of the ancient Greeks. So that was pretty cool. In China or in Asia, I ran in China on the Great Wall. Which was very intense. Definitely,
wow.
That one took the longest of all of my races for several reasons, but it was one of the most humanly rewarding because that one definitely took teamwork and people working together to finish. In Africa, I ran in Kenya, actually in a game park. So we ran in the Lewa Wildlife Conservancy, which was pretty amazing. So that Serengeti Marathon would be really awesome, I know, for your daughter.
Right.
In Antarctica, we were down in the Antarctic Peninsula on the King George Island, and we talked about that a bit. And then for South America, I actually ran on Easter Island, which is called Rapa Nui by its indigenous population. So that's the island with all the big, you know, the statues, which was pretty amazing as well. Yes. In Oceania or Australia, I ran in Port Douglas, which is right where the Great Barrier Reef is. And that one was cool. That was in conjunction with a total solar eclipse. So we watched the eclipse, and then the starting gun for the race was you know, the sun's rays coming back out from behind the moon. And then we were off and running. So that one was pretty amazing as well. They were all amazing. I can't say enough.
Tell me a little bit about what made the running on the Great Wall of China so number one, difficult, and
mm-hmm.
why it was so memorable to you.
Yes. So the entire race wasn't on the wall, but enough of it was to be just super challenging. If you've been there or have seen pictures, the Great Wall of China has tons of steps and lots of variable size steps, little steps and big steps and very steep steps, and I had actually had, I thought I was injured. So I had a foot problem that had kept me from running for 6 weeks. So I went to this race not having run in 6 weeks, thinking I was injured. And incidentally, I was not. I somehow, whatever happened with my foot fixed itself when we were hiking on the wall section before the marathon. We were actually required to hike the wall section two or three days earlier so that we knew what we were getting ourselves into because it was going to be so challenging. But then my other problem was that when I got there, my GPS watch that I had fully charged before I left had died, actually. And I'm a run walker, so I will, for instance, run for 5 minutes, walk for a minute, run for 5 minutes, walk for a minute. And so my watch, you know, beeps at me when in my timing intervals. And so I was thinking, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? I don't have my watch. So what actually happened is a woman who was in my tour group who was an Ironman triathlete, like she had completed an Ironman, she volunteered to run with me and pace me. Now, I said I'm not fast, and I hadn't run in 6 weeks, so she dramatically slowed down and ran with me for 21 miles. So she got me to the 21-mile mark, which we had to get to by a certain time or we would be taken off the course. So she got me there, and then she, you know, of course, blasted off at her own pace after that, and I was going along at my much slower pace and ran into another guy from my tour group who had actually given up, and he was sitting on the steps, and he said, you know, they can come pick me up tomorrow. So I sat down with him and said, well, okay, what I've been doing is just kind of going up 20 steps at a time and then stopping. So how about if we just walk up 10 steps? And then we'll just sit there and then go up 10 more. So we went up 10 steps and sat back down, went up 10 more steps and sat back down, and basically, you know, inched our way to the finish line and crossed the finish line together, hand in hand, with 7 minutes to spare on the 8-hour time limit. So
that was the beginning of your coaching practice right there. You coached right? You did.
Yes, you know. Yes, and someone coached me. So the thing about that was that it went both ways. Someone helped me. I wouldn't have finished without you know, my Ironman, and he wouldn't have finished without me. So it was like paying it forward, and it was just beautiful.
What a great story. What would you say that running has taught you about life? Is there an answer to that?
Well, there's actually quite a few answers to that, but a couple of main things are that really running has taught me to take things one step at a time. You know, it is overwhelming to be at the start line of a marathon. You're thinking, oh my gosh, I have 26 miles to go. Over and over in my training runs, I just started to notice. I mean, this doesn't sound super profound, but it's profound when you're on the course, that one foot in front of the other and the finish line eventually arrives, and it always arrives. You know, I would have 1 mile down and 19 to go in a training run, thinking, oh my gosh, 19 to go. And one foot in front of the other, eventually I would notice, oh my gosh, only 1 mile to go. And I always got there. So it was really just breaking things down into chunks, which was another thing. You know, there were a lot of hills that kind of came up through the running story. And hills mean the same thing to me. Hills are challenging in the moment, but they're a smaller challenge than the marathon itself. So hills are manageable. You can, you know, focus and push and get to the top, and then you have a little bit of a rest and a celebration. Hey, I made it to the top of this hill. And so that pause to rest and celebrate when we complete milestones along the way is really important. You know, I think so often we wait until some big thing is completely done before we let ourselves celebrate, but there's so many little steps along the way that we should be celebrating as we go, so that it's not, we don't have to wait till, you know, retirement or the next project is done or the next promotion or the finish line of the marathon. You don't wait for all that to celebrate. There's lots of little things to celebrate along the way. And then I think really the most important thing I've learned is to be in the present moment. You know, running for me was not about time, speed, or distance. It's really about listening to your body and connecting with nature and connecting with your inner wisdom. You know, you're out there. Yeah, there's people around you, but you're really just in communion with nature and yourself. And so it's not the destination. It's really the journey. So the run is the win was really what I internalized from all of my runs.
That's so good of you. We're talking to Dr. Melissa Corley Carter. She's the author of the book Running the World, Marathon Memoirs from the Seven Continents. I don't know you personally, Dr. Carter or Melissa, but I'm just wondering, somebody who's listening to this may wonder, what age range were you when you were doing this continent running? I mean, what was the last continent marathon you ran? Was it recently or a number of years ago?
I finished the continents in 2012. I ran one marathon after that in 2015, but I finished the continents in 2012.
I'm wondering, what age were you when you were running, doing all of this running? You were in your 30s,
yes.
Your 40s?
I was in my late 20s, early 30s.
Okay, so you were in shape, so to speak. Well, that's good. Let's talk about.
I believe them. People. Yeah. Go ahead. No, I'm just gonna say you can be in shape at any age.
No, that's true. Well, I didn't know. You could have said, well, I ran it when I was 50 or something like that.
Right.
World.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No
let me ask you a little bit about writing the book. You know what made you sit down to think, well, I'm going to write a book about this? How about that?
You know, that was actually a pretty amazing experience. I was actually trying, and this was, you know, the 2019 timeframe, I was actually trying to write a book about leadership. And, you know, I had some ideas, I had some things I wanted to share, but I was struggling sort of existentially, thinking everyone and their dog has written a book about leadership. What am I going to say that's different? And I was also just a little bit of, you know, what am I doing with my life? You know, am I really doing my soul work? What would I be doing if it had already arrived? You know, those kinds of questions. And I literally had this, you know, the idea, it felt like one of those voices from the sky kind of moments that I had, you know, never really had before, but that I was thinking about what do I already have, and what landed just with such clarity was coffee table book. I have all the pictures. I have the stories. And so it was really just an amazing epiphany about what I already had to contribute. You know, I think I was struggling so much to create something, you know, that, you know, in some way was sort of an external expectation, but what I already had to share that was unique was basically this book. So it felt like one of those soul callings, you know, just leaped out at me that's the book that wanted to be created, you know, kind of its own life. So that was pretty cool. And then it actually opened up so many more epiphanies. It was, you know, thinking about the order of the marathons and how it kind of paralleled my life. I just learned so much from the writing process itself. So it really felt like the book wrote itself through me, which was quite a phenomenal experience.
Well, you're to be congratulated for writing this book. I know it's a spectacular book. The book, again, is Running the World, Marathon Memoirs from the Seven Continents, with spectacular pictures of everywhere you went and your running experiences. What I guess the ideal question to ask you is, how has your own life inspired your coaching work? How would you answer that?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, again, going back to that astronaut thing, I think one of the things that I just love coaching people about is finding a sense of purpose. And this is not like your purpose is behind the next tree or under the next rock kind of thing that, you know, we're like, what am I supposed to be doing? It's really not about doing. It's about being. And I think for me, you know, as I have been, you know, on the super fast track and done all the things and gotten all the degrees and done the high pressure thing, which, you know, worked for me until it didn't. I think it's really about helping people recognize maybe when they have been living according to society's expectations as opposed to their own internal alignment. So my own life, I had this huge shocking experience or soul-crushing moment. And so helping people navigate their own, whether it's soul crushing or just, you know, a history of being out of alignment and doing what people expect of you as opposed to what you really want to do and be, really helping people come alive, like you said, come alive and really just bring their aliveness to the world. That's what I felt like I have been able to do, and I want to help as many people do that as possible. So what I've experienced in my life is what I want to help people navigate in their own lives.
And is that what people are looking for when they come to you for their coaching experience with you? Basically, what's a typical picture of someone who comes to you for help? What are they looking for?
Yes, you know, I think a lot of times they're overwhelmed, you know, too much on their plate, too much to do, just kind of spinning. But also, as you said at the beginning, you know, someone who's lost their spark, you know, they're kind of going through the motions. Feeling like there must be more. There must be something more. And, you know, I feel like I have so much more potential, but maybe it's being wasted. And So it's really about getting to the root of what's going on. And a lot of the root is usually in the stories we're telling ourselves. So, you know, I'm a meaning maker to the core. I was always better at English and literature analysis than science, or I had to work harder for science anyway. But so it's really about helping people shift the meanings they have around what's going on for them or their relationships or just their relationship with themselves is usually what it is, and really helping people shift out of conditioned negative self-talk into really empowering themselves to really bring their best to life. So hopefully that answers your question. But yes, it's really about
you do it very well.
More to contribute.
You do it very well.
Yes.
Well, we've run out of time. Dr. Carter, thank you so much. Melissa, it's been a real joy having you with us. The book, again, is Running the World, Marathon Memoirs from the Seven Continents. It's available on Amazon and bookstores everywhere. And the website, again, don't forget, check out that website, resilienceactually.com. Melissa, thank you. It's been great having
you
as a guest.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
We
appreciate it.
Thank you, Doug.
You're very, very welcome.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
That's it, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. Thanks for being with us. See you next time. Bye for now.